And thank you to all of you for inviting me here for this celebration of Earth Sunday. As you heard, I live in Los Osos, which is a tremendous gift because there are hills and ocean on every side. We all know Morro Rock, but if you are not familiar with Hollister Peak, I suggest you make her acquaintance. It's private ground, it's not available to walk on, but from a distance you can see her many moods and her dresses through the year as green turns to gold, to brown, and then purple when the lupins flower. Hollister smiles down on Los Osos like a guardian angel. Most mornings when the tide is below about 4 feet, I walk my dog on the back shore of Morro Bay Estuary alongside Baywood Park. A couple of weeks ago, I was walking warily on the piles of dead eelgrass which the tide brings in. You have to be careful because it can be totally dry on the top, but wet and very squishy underneath. So as I was walking carefully along, I saw the head of a creature that was mainly covered by the eelgrass. I didn't know what it was. I touched it, and it recoiled a little, so I knew it was still alive. When I cleared away the grass, I saw that it was about 14 inches long, black all over, rather like a small eel or a small snake. I wanted to put it somewhere safe where it could either die comfortably or recover in safety without someone else standing on it or a dog digging it up. But I had a dilemma. Was it a snake, an earth creature, or was it a type of eel, a water creature washed up by the tide? I chose to put it in the shallows, and I saw that it responded to the water as though it was familiar. So I think I made the right decision. My decision was crucial to the welfare of that little creature, because it was a creature of its environment. Put in the wrong place, it would for sure die. But put in the right place, it might flourish. And so are we humans. Creatures of our environment. Throw us in deep water, and eventually we will drown. Put us on another planet, and we will die. And yet we talk about the environment as though it is something separate from us. There is humanity, and there is the environment. We get to do things to the environment, which we imagine is quite separate from us. And yet the environment is also inside of us. As you know, the environment of our gut is a busy place, filled with bacteria, fungi, parasites, and viruses. This microbiome is so important to our health that it has been called an organ in its own right. And that inner environment is itself connected to the outer environment. I understand that each one of us has a unique microbiome that's originally determined by our DNA. We are first exposed to microorganisms as an infant through delivery in the birth canal and then through the mother's breast milk. So exactly which microorganisms we receive depends solely on the species found in our mothers. But later on, environmental exposure and diet change our microbiome. So our inner environment is determined not only by our DNA, but also by our outer environment. We are not separate from the environment which surrounds us. And that's probably the main thrust of what I want to say this morning. If you only remember and think about one thing, I would like it to be this. We are not separate. The black eel-like creature I found could not survive separated from its right environment. Humanity will not survive if we continue to believe that we are somehow separate from our environment. So that's the sermon. The rest is just more. So you can now go to sleep. So just as we each have a unique microbiome, which interacts uniquely with the rest of our body, we all have an inner soul environment, which interacts with the unique environment in which we live. I'm using the word soul to describe that inner life, which is a busy microcosm of thoughts, feelings, memories, and experiences that together form our perceptions and guide our interactions with the outer environment of people, things, technology, trees, dogs, and plants that make up our unique outer world. Like the microbiome, the inner soul environment is unique, but it is influenced by the soul environment of those we love and those we pay attention to. As you know, I'm an Episcopal priest, retired from parish ministry. So my spiritual and theological environment is Christian. But that's not a happy way for me to describe myself, because the name is also used by people who live in a very different soul environment to me. Most people imagine that Christianity is one clearly defined stream of thought and that all Christians believe the same thing. But this has never been true. The earliest followers of Jesus the Christ had no Christian scriptures, so they depended on word of mouth and their lived experience to know about Jesus. And as a result, Christianity developed very differently in different places. You could not say, well, what's the Bible say about something? Because there was no Bible. And even in the centuries since Christian writings were gathered and some were included in the Bible together with the Hebrew scriptures, there has never been any true consensus on what Christians believe or do. Christianity has always adapted to the intellectual and spiritual environment in which it was planted. So the religion of the Western Church became culturally very different from the religion of the Eastern Church. The Christianity of Africa differs from the Christianity of England. My own soul environment has been deeply formed by the Findhorn community in Scotland, an international spiritual community based on a really glorious mishmash of both esoteric and exoteric spiritual teachings. So I have incorporated many of the ideas that resonated with me there into my understanding of Christian teaching. And I find many theologians, mystics, and philosophers whose ideas also resonate with what I have come to know as true, and who also challenge me to new ideas, new experiences, new vistas. My thinking is progressive. I cherish the central teachings of the faith as I understand them, but see all the symbols, the ideas and writings as fingers pointing to the moon, not the moon itself. God is both very knowable and completely, profoundly unknowable. So the two readings I chose for today are both solidly within the Christian tradition, because I cannot stand apart from my own soul environment any more than I can separate from the majesty of Hollister Peak, who watches over my home, or the sand on which my house stands, or the goldfinches who feast at my feeders. Jesus summed up the Jewish law in two simple commands: love your God with every part of you, and love your neighbor as yourself. I have often pondered the meaning of love your neighbor as yourself. Am I to love my neighbor as much as myself? Or am I to love my neighbor as though they were me? Or am I to love my neighbor because they are me? If the unity of all creation, which is glimpsed by mystics, proclaimed by spiritual teachers, and seems supported by science, is indeed real, then there is no separation between me and my neighbor. So loving my neighbor is truly loving myself. And who is my neighbor, if not the planet herself, without whom I cannot take a breath? We are not separate. Every time I share love, I am building the new, and every time I don't, even in my quietest thoughts, I am adding to the tension and despair in the world. Every time I look at someone or something judgmentally, I'm tearing down the bonds of community in my failure to love my neighbor as myself. Laudato Si is an astonishing and profound document published by the Pope in 2015. For those of you not familiar with it, it emphasizes that all of us can cooperate as instruments of God for the care of creation, each according to his or her own culture, experience, involvements, and talents. And it outlines 8 goals for doing so, which include ecological economics, sustainable lifestyle, and social justice. The encyclical itself is not hard to read, and there's a great website, Laudato Si Action Platform, to help us turn the ideas into action. And as an encyclical, it is now part of the doctrine and teaching of the Roman Catholic Church. There are about 1.4 billion Catholics. That's about 17% of the world's population. Imagine how it would be if all those people got really serious about creation care. Imagine how it would be if each of those 1.4 billion Catholics, plus the approximately 800,000 Unitarians, and the 85 million Anglicans, not to mention the 12 million Methodists, and, well, you get the picture. How would it be if people of faith around the world really studied Laudato Si and understood and took action to change the way we live? The importance of Laudato Si and so many other writings and poems and movies and songs is that they change our soul environment, and they give us a language to cooperate with others in our social environment and our communities to make change. I imagine that everyone here has been moved at one time or another to consider lifestyle changes. I wonder what first spurred that for you. For me, I think the book Diet for a Small Planet, which came out in 1971, was my first step to a different consciousness, as I started to understand that regularly eating meat was using more than my fair share of the planet's resources. And now I know that eating cheese doesn't help the climate, and I struggle with reducing my cheese consumption. But my point is that change starts in our soul environment. And that is where environmental concerns and spirituality meet. Let me briefly contrast 2 different soul environments which you might find within Christian circles. 1 pits Christians against the world, which is fundamentally evil and is out to get Christians because they are a threat. The other says that people of faith are like yeast in a loaf of bread. The yeast makes a difference to the flour. It makes it more nourishing and enjoyable, and that is what we are called to nourish the flourishing of all environments, both inner and outer. Now, if you believe that you are in a battle against a hostile world, you will not be looking for connection. You will not be thinking about how to improve the prosperity of bees or the sustainability of the soil. But if you understand that you are part and parcel of a web of life where what you do makes a difference, even if just a small one, just like the yeast. And you approach everything you do with the intention of supporting the flourishing of all life. Then your soul environment will feed your actions and your political behavior, and it will feed those around you as well. Now, one of the fascinating things about the yeast analogy is that when bread yeast leavens the flour, or wine yeast turns juice into wine, it is just living its own best life. The flourishing of yeast is what gives life to the bread or the wine. As you will know, if, like me, you have ever killed yeast by putting it in too hot water or by leaving it in your pantry for far too long. Yeast is a living organism, and when it is at its best, it is making carbon dioxide and alcohol, which then give life to the bread and the wine. So, if we are like yeast, living our best life gives life to the world. In Laudato Si, we heard, when our hearts are authentically open to universal communion, this sense of fraternity excludes nothing and no one. Now, if we follow that idea of universal communion, that we are not separate, then there is a connection between my heart or my soul environment and the goldfinches in my yard. There is also a connection between my soul environment and the war in Gaza, or the drying up of the Great Salt Lake. It's kind of scary, but also exciting, because it means that environmental action is not just putting up solar panels, buying organic food, avoiding palm oil, and driving an electric car, important as those things are. Environmental action is also filling my soul environment with the things that bring life. Love and forgiveness, peace and beauty. On my own, I cannot change very much. On my own, I cannot influence the war in Gaza or Ukraine or Sudan, nor can I bring water to the Great Salt Lake or to Southern Africa, where millions are facing acute hunger because of drought. But I can give my intention and my hope for all beings to be free from suffering and to live in the heart of healing. And as I change my soul environment from a fear of lack to generous giving, then that changes a little bit of the world. And if all those people of faith do the same thing, then the political support for the flourishing of all beings will develop. Having said that, I want to mention that there is a real distortion of this train of thought. It's one that's quite popular. And that is the idea that if I look after me and do everything I can to be peaceful and comfortable, then that is enough. And somehow looking after me will magically make things better for other people. And that is not at all what I mean. The yeast makes wine and bread when it first flourishes, and then it dies. Soil is made by microorganisms and soil animals like worms, but they feed on dead plant and animal material. Life comes out of death, and that is the missing component of a self-focused soul environment which seeks to make everything lovely for itself. We are told to love our neighbor as ourselves. We cannot do that when we are ego-driven, when we are trying to take care of number one. Creating a soul environment which gives life, which supports the flourishing of all beings, means dying to the unhealthy and grasping aspects of ourselves. And this is one way that we can understand the central drama of the Christian narrative, the crucifixion. Somehow, by giving up his own life, Jesus the Christ gave life to the world. And that was not just humanity, not just the planet, but the entire cosmos. His death brought resurrection, and resurrection not just for himself, but for all who choose to be in relationship to the divine, whose nature is totally, totally love. And that is what I find so exciting about the few verses I read from the Apostle Paul's letter to the Romans. It says, "The creation waits with eager longing for the revealing of the children of God." Another way of putting it is, all creation's waiting on tiptoe to see the children of God come into their own. Creation is not waiting for us on tiptoe to live more sustainably, but to become who we were made to be. Because living sustainably grows out of the change of heart, the change of soul environment, which enables us to live in self-giving love, in communion with the one who is love, with a capital L. Creation is waiting on tiptoe for us to get that we are all one. We are not separate. And that love is powerful. So what we think and what we do and how we treat the God in all creation really matters. Thank you.